I'm Russ White for Greening of the Great Lakes. It's a pleasure to welcome the ubiquitous journalist Jack Lessenberry back to Greening of the Great Lakes. Jack is one of Michigan's most respected commentators on news and issues of the day, and it's great to have him back on the show to share some of his thoughts on environment-related topics in the news. Jack, great talking with you again.
Well, thanks, Russ. I don't know if I'm ubiquitous. I think I'm mostly French and German, but I'll take it.
Jack, let's start with the Enbridge Line 5 under the Straits of Mackinac. I believe there are some draft reports out now, one on alternatives, one on risks, and there's some public comment being taken over the summer. Where are we on that important issue, and where do you see it going?
Well, I don't know that any man can say where it's going to go. And there's all sorts of questions, and there's a report out saying that the chances of any kind of a break are very small. And then there's allegations that the group doing the report has ties to Enbridge. Another report indicates it might have a 6% chance of breaking in the next few years. But what we all know is this, that something like 540,000 gallons a day of oil, not heavy crude oil, but oil and natural gas move through that pipe. That pipe has been at the bottom of the strait since 1953. And if anything were to happen, both Lakes Michigan and Lake Huron could be damaged beyond our power to imagine. Now, U.S. Senator Gary Peters told me he asked the head admiral of the Coast Guard if they could contain a spill if one happened, and the admiral told him no. So, of course, there's a number of studies showing what we could do instead. Maybe the most popular one was sort of sinking it in a covered tunnel or trench that would make things safer and would cost maybe $200 million. But again, these things cost money, and Enbridge is a private Canadian-based firm, although I think they're technically headquartered in Texas. And it just remains to be seen how much political pressure will be put on this company to do something about that.
And Jack, does Attorney General Schuette have the power to shut it down? It seems to be unclear who, if it's going to be shut down, who gets to say so?
There are those who maintain that under the Constitution of the State of Michigan that he indeed has that power. He hasn't weighed in on that. He has called for it to be shut down eventually, but he hasn't set a date for that. He hasn't pressed Enbridge to set a date. And in the background of all of this, 7 years ago, another Enbridge pipeline in the Kalamazoo River broke and caused a massive disaster that cost well over $1 billion and some years to clean up. When the pipe broke in the Kalamazoo case and the alarm bells went off, incompetent administrators in the Enbridge office concluded it was plugged and forced more oil through it for hours, compounding the problem. So this doesn't make people feel very easy at all. Now, I think the bottom line, if you reduce it to two things, is number one, there is no sign of a break. There's no sign of any problem so far with that pipeline. But number two, if that pipeline were to have any kind of a major breaks, two of the most important lakes in the world could be irrevocably damaged.
Jack, what are your thoughts on President Trump pulling the United States out of the Paris Accord and that decision's ramifications?
I think it's a very bad thing. I've talked to people. When this happened, I was in Italy and Greece for a while, and some people I talked to said, you know, the United States used to be a world leader. You might have disagreed with them, but you look to the United States for providing leadership in a wide number of areas, including the environment, and now we have tended to become sort of an outlier. And I think that that just doesn't send a good signal to anyone, certainly for partnership and certainly for those who care about the environment. Now, had he come out and called for some modifications or tweaking in the Paris Accords, I think not only would people have been much more receptive, they'd have been willing to go along with him. And while I am not an absolute expert on the subject, I think there are probably areas where it could be improved. But he seems to be sort of an all-or-nothing kind of guy.
Were you heartened, though, Jack, by the reaction of so many in the business community and leaders in the local levels of government, you know, Bill Ford Jr. among them, who were quick to say our goals are still in place? It sounds like this train has left the station and just it's only the administration being left behind.
Well, being a Detroiter, you know, I'm a natural pessimist. And yes, this was heartening. But then what happens if some company violates these accords and starts making money as a result? I would think there'd be tremendous pressure on other companies not to be such a good citizen. I hope I'm totally wrong about that. I hope we get back on track. But, you know, we only have one world and one environment, and it's very dangerous to fool around with them.
Jack Lessenberry, my guest on Greening of the Great Lakes. Jack, it bubbles up in the news every now and then and goes away, but I haven't heard much about Asian carp. Have you?
Yes, I have. Just a week or so ago, they found one only 9 miles from Lake Michigan, a silver carp. There are two species of these. One is the bighead carp, which is larger. I think it can get up to 120 pounds. There's the silver carp, which are somewhat smaller, but they're jumpers, and they have, in cases of the Mississippi River, jumped in the boats, broken people's jaws, broken their limbs. You have this powerful 60 or 80-pound fish flying through the air, and perhaps more importantly, they suck up all the food and help eliminate other species of fish. Now, there's some question about how well they can do in the Great Lakes, but there's general consensus that if they get established in, say, the western part of Lake Erie, that's the end of Lake Erie. And they may well be able to spread to other lakes as well. Lake Superior might be too cold for them, but you never know. And again, we haven't done enough to stop these carp, most people feel. We haven't been willing to put in permanent barriers or reroute canals or do other things. And I'm told that if you got 400 of them in the Great Lakes, we'd be doomed. But if one or two gets in, we may be able to sustain that. But if they get a breeding population, we're in serious trouble.
Speaking of Lake Erie, Jack, a story you followed closely is the phosphorus runoff from primarily agriculture and the algae blooms. We're in the thick of the summer. What's that situation like this year?
Well, we never know till the year's over. In some years, everybody remembers 3 years ago, the toxic bacteria, cyanobacteria in the algae, caused a total shutdown of drinking water in Toledo, Ohio, and parts of Monroe, Michigan, and people were driving for several days to Detroit to get bottled water. And I'm told this is probably just a matter of time before it happens again. It's less likely to happen in drought years than in years with a lot of moisture. But what happens is that farmers put fertilizer on the ground. Also, you have some of these huge, they're technically called CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations, but they're really factory farms. You have individual farms that are emitting as much waste as the entire city of Lansing every day, and it's not treated the way human waste is, and eventually it leaches into the water. And this is sort of a terrible problem, and the problem is compounded by, of course, the Trump administration, remember, wants to zero out all the money for the Great Lakes Initiative and badly cut the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. A man who ran the Ohio Sea Grant Program for years, Professor Jeff Reuter, told me that if that happens, we're not going to be able to guarantee fresh drinking water for 11 million people. Now, there's some indication Congress is going to restore some or all of that Great Lakes Restoration Initiative funding, but maybe not the EPA. So these are things that I think we genuinely should be seriously concerned about.
And Jack, recently in the news, too, it was described as a Delaware-sized iceberg that broke off in the Antarctic. And I guess just what is that telling you about climate change and maybe the biggest problem involved in that, which is the sea level rise?
Well, no one has said whether Joe Biden is on that Delaware-sized ice floe. I want to know that. But seriously, what I am told is that this particular ice floe doesn't present a major danger. It would raise, New York Times said it would raise the oceans when it melts by sort of a negligible amount itself. What it says is the trend, what the trend is going to be. And obviously, anybody who knows anything about it can't deny climate change, global warming. This is an indication that the southern ice cap is melting. Now, if the North Pole and the South Pole ever completely melted, it would raise the water level around the world a great deal. You might have beachfront property in Nevada, and you certainly have a lot more flooding in places like Michigan. So, again, this is another long-term, very serious problem that we are apparently not doing enough about.
Jack, before I let you go, you instruct the journalism students at Wayne State University. We're in this really weird world of fake news. And what are you teaching them? What kind of field are they going in? Are you optimistic? The journalism is more important than ever, but I'm a little worried.
Well, I think we're all a little worried, but about last spring I brought arguably the most powerful man in American print journalism, Dean Baquet, the executive editor of the New York Times, came and spent a day with me and my students, and he's very optimistic about journalism. He thinks that concern about these policies and interest in the Trump administration has made journalism he thinks it'll make journalism and reading serious journalism more popular than ever. Some of the major papers, including the Times and the Post and the Wall Street Journal, have seen their circulations go up. We have more journalism majors this fall than we've had at Wayne State University. But there are still, again, it's a changing world. There are not enough journalists. A lot have lost their jobs. There's not enough good newspapers anymore. And so this is going to be a constant struggle. But as we all know, and as people knew from time back as far as Ben Franklin, it's better to have an informed public than an ignorant one.
Jack, thanks so much for sharing your insights with us again on a variety of topics.
It's an honor to be here, Russ.
Jack Lessenberry, you can hear more of on places like Michigan Radio, the Metro Times, Traverse City Record Eagle. Just Google Jack Lessenberry for a treasure trove of news, analysis, and commentary. Again, Jack, great talking to you. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much.